Welcome back to Extra Feature Interview. Today we have a fabulous guest all the way across the pond. His film's only 4 minutes and 58 seconds, so we're really going to hammer him on that today. John Blagrove, welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Why'd you send me such a short film?
Yeah, that's a very good question. I've been making short films for quite some time now, and one of the things as a producer I was seeing a lot of was scripts of short films which are sort of like 20 minutes long, 15 minutes long, and I have always kind of maintained if you've got no money and a very sort of low budget, the most effective short films tend to be the shortest. And I kind of was like wanting to move away from producing shorts and have a go at directing my own. And the way Brink came about was I set myself a sort of like, I don't know, almost like boundaries of, you know, one location, you know, no more than two characters, that sort of thing. And I kind of couldn't really see it going up more than 5 minutes. So the fact that it came in at pretty much exactly 4 minutes and 58 seconds was was engineered, but I was hoping for it to be more closer to 3 or 4 minutes. So, yeah.
Okay, well, we can talk about your whole film since it's so short. Yeah. Let's start off right from the beginning. Give me two street shots.
Yeah, street shots, yeah. Suburban nighttime in the UK.
So is this your house? Is this somebody's house you found that you broke into?
The house we filmed in?
Well, the streets, the house? Give me some more insight.
Well, the streets we shot it at are like an area around where I live in Norfolk. It's quite a sleepy suburb of a city called Norwich. Nothing ever goes wrong there. Nothing ever happens there. It's quite quiet. Everyone knows that, you know, knows everybody. It's really nice. There's low crime. So what happens is, you know, there's a creeping sense of dread. We find ourselves inside a suburban home. Everyone asleep, lights off. And then we see a torch coming through the kitchen. And then the sounds of someone breaking in.
So, okay, stop there for a second. I want to go right from there. Now, we know things happen from there. Now, my question is, we don't know why they're breaking in ever.
No. I worked this out as a backstory. I'm not a big fan of films which kind of telegraph large amounts of exposition to their audience. I like the audience to be quite smart. You know, I think audiences are a lot smarter than, you know, often sometimes filmmakers, you know, take them for. So we kind of built this whole backstory. There is a motive for the reason why the people are sort of like, the person is breaking in. Don't want to give the game away of the ending, you know, too early on. But, you know, it's one of these things where, you know, over here in the UK, often these kind of stories are kind of like seen in the national newspapers as kind of like small one paragraph story, you know, tragedy following, you know, a suburban home breaking. So I wanted to tell like a story which was taken from like one of those kind of like true life stories, even though it's not based on any specific true story. I just wanted to have this ring of, you know, authenticity about it. But also, you know, often you read those very short one paragraph stories and there's like a whole, you just think there's a whole, you know, story that's happened there. People's lives have, you know, changed or been destroyed. So what actually happened, the bigger detail, which you never really, you know, read as a, you know, as a reader. So we kind of like use that as a jumping off point. So the break-in was to use a device to get us in, you know, as a kind of like, let me try to rephrase this a little bit. So the break-in was, you know, seen as like a device to get into these homes, which are supposed to be your, you know, safety net, your, you know, sleeping bed. You know, I think, you know, the ultimate horror for anybody who's got two kids, or, you know, how many kids, that, you know, nice job, you know, nice house, live in a nice area, is to, you know, find that being taken away from you, you know, violently, or, you know, finding someone else in your house. I mean, you know, it's not something that's happened to me particularly, but, you know, it's happened to people I know, and, you know, that's why we have insurance. You know, fortunately, you know, England doesn't, you know, it's not a, you know, a culture based around, you know, where guns, though we do have violent crime. That's, you know, so, you know, it's one of these things which is always preying on your mind. You know, what you make your house as safe as possible. You know, you pay your bills on time. You know, you try and feed your, you know, family. You put your kids into school. You know, try to do the right things, but that can be taken away in an instant by someone breaking in. So I find that quite, you know, interesting, dramatic proposition for like a small film like Brink, is to have like that kind of story unfold the way it does, if that makes sense.
It does. So I have more questions. The woman is, at some point, says, "I know people."
Yeah,
but we don't know who those people are. Like, you're really making me guess here, making me work.
Yeah. So yeah, I mean, if you want me to, do you want me to go into the whole character?
No, I want to know if there's a second film.
The actress Lisa Dwight Hogg is absolutely fantastic. She's a great Northern Irish actress. She's currently in an RTL series called Acceptable Risk, which is fantastic. And I'd love to work with her again. And we have got plans for the character. Maybe not a direct sequel to Brink, but I'd like to take that character and put her into a feature setting. There is ideas afoot to develop a sort of feature, not out of Brink itself, but taking that character, her character, and put it into as like a feature thriller, a feature-length thriller. The sort of backstory we created for that, she was, you know, trying to escape a life which she found herself in, a, like low-level sort of like, you know, crime life. Her boyfriend was abusive, you know, petty gangster, you know, and she decided, we came up with this kind of like notion that her character wanted to break away from that, and to get away she needed a quick cash injection. So by breaking into a safe bet house and, you know, just quickly swiping an iPad or a laptop or something, she could quickly, you know, fence off to somebody, she could raise enough cash to get a, you know, plane or a train or, you know, a boat out of the UK or wherever she was going to go. You know, so that was the kind of like this sort of background we created for her character to get into that position where she finds herself in the film.
So where did you find her?
Where did I find her? Well, the associate producer, Johnny Phillips, is a long-standing friend of mine. He's a great actor in his own right. He's probably one of his biggest roles to date was as Lieutenant Lightoller in James Cameron's Titanic. He's still a working actor. He's in you can see him on Netflix at the moment in The Outlaw King. But he's transitioned into directing at the moment. So I've produced a couple of his short films, and he's one of these actors that knows everybody. And, you know, I showed him the script and he goes, "I know who's great for this." And he mentioned Lisa's name and Tim Plester, who plays the man in the film. And, yeah, they were just perfect choices. So, in a way, Johnny's role was more of a casting director, but he just picked these names out and said these people would be perfect. I really wanted somebody who could have this fine, delicate line of being have a vulnerable presence, but also have a meanness and a toughness which he could switch on, which was convincing, you know, and not be, you know, too, you know, it feel natural. And I think she's great in it, and she does that with, you know, aplomb.
I guess my next question is, how long did it take you to film it?
One day. Yeah, that was the other part of the rules we set ourselves, was like no more than one, you know, location, two actors, and shoot it in one day. So we shot the main scene in just, you know, standard like shooting hours. I think we started filming at about 9 in the morning. We shot day for night in the interior. And then we wrapped the main sort of bulk of the shot around about sort of like, you know, 6 p.m. So it was quite a short shoot. That being said, I mean, like, I think any filmmaker will say that they'd like, if they could do it again, they'd do it differently. So, but then we kind of wrapped the main unit, and myself and the DP Lou Wickham went out and hit the mean streets with Heather Set in Norfolk, getting some funny looks from locals as we went around, getting those establishing suburban shots at the start. It's surprisingly hard to find somewhere in the UK that still has the amber street lighting. Everything seems to have been switched over to LED lights, which is not what we wanted. We want to go for that, you know, that orangey glow you get from the older street lights. But fortunately, some streets in the village of Heatherset still hadn't been switched over, so we kind of hit that hard. And it had the look we wanted to as well, the kind of like quintessential British suburb.
How'd you find your film?
How did I find it?
Fund it.
Oh, it's completely self-funded. Which is, I've made films with public money before through the UK Film Council, which was the public funding body in the past. And then, you know, Creative England, which took over from that. It's not, that sort of money is now controlled by the BFI. But I felt like this sort of project was something which I, you know, if I would, wanted to sort of test myself as a director, having made quite a lot of short films in the past, as a producer, you know, I knew I could make a short, but actually when it came down to it, I was thinking, oh, can I actually work with actors? I've never had that kind of like one-on-one contact, you know, in terms of directing someone on screen before. So I think, you know, in a way, Brink came out of that sort of conversation. Obviously, like a lot of filmmakers, we've all got lots of different projects we'd love to do, like for features, and I've got a couple of more longer form shorts that I really want to make. But, you know, Brink was kind of born out of the desire to actually have a go at making something. So I thought I'd dip my hand in my own back pocket and, you know, sold a few bits of old kit that were lying around and, you know, just a few bits, you know, a couple of children, you know. But, yeah, it was pretty cost-effective. I think the whole film total, including post, was about £1,500, so £1,500. So there's a lot of favours called in, specifically with post, so, yeah.
Did you feed them? Or you just said,
yeah, we fed the crew, yeah. Fed the crew. Yeah, definitely.
I have to ask, you never know.
They walked away. I have a kind of like maximum. If you're not paying your crew like a decent rate, you got to at least cover their expenses and then make sure they're well fed and well looked after on the day. So
I like to ask, that's all.
Everyone wants to work with me again. So if you just excuse me, I just got to turn the alert off. There's like a, it's just on the main person had, you know, mixed results. I think my most successful as a producer was the 2010 film Bro, which was directed by Chris Dundon, and that went everywhere. It was great to, you know, see that get such, you know, festival accolades, and then it was picked up by Shorts International. It's screened on television in the UK on the BBC, and, you know, that was great. So I kind of like learned the kind of like ropes of the festival circuit through the shorts I produced. So the thing is with Brink, it's kind of like a weird film because it's a genre film, but it's not a genre film. So it's quite hard to pigeonhole it. So I kind of targeted some of the, you know, more genre-friendly festivals. It's had a bit of success there. It's even been picked up by a couple of smaller horror festivals, which is interesting because they're seeing it as a modern horror, which I guess it is. If you look, take it in a sort of literal context, that, you know, it is some people's nightmare to have to wake up in the middle of the night and find a stranger in their home, which could cause them, you know, their family physical harm. So, yeah, it's going out to festivals still. It's got quite a few screenings coming up. This weekend it's screening twice. Next weekend it's screening twice. It's screening at the Norwich Film Festival, which is in where I live. So it's kind of a hometown screening, which is a great up-and-coming festival. It's, you know, British Independent Film Awards recognised. It's been going for just a few years, but it's getting some good short films. It's getting some good speakers. Chris Eccleston was this opening night speaker this year's festival. It's screening there, but it's also screening at the BAFTA and Oscar-affiliated Foyle Film Festival in Derry in Northern Ireland, which is a great little festival. I've had a feature documentary screen there a few years ago, so I'm really pleased that it's going back there. It's screened at quite a few little short festivals around the UK already. It's actually even bizarrely screened in Kenya, in Nairobi, at a Halloween it's screened in Kenya, in Nairobi, at a Halloween themed shorts night, alongside nine other shorts, eight of which were Kenyan homegrown shorts. So, and that was through the British Council. All the short films I make get registered with the British Council. I find that kind of like an invaluable resource to find which are good festivals to apply to, but also any festivals that are registered with them. If they're international, you can qualify for a bursary grant to actually go there. So the film has its American premiere, North American, in Pennsylvania in early December. It's screening at the PA Indie Shorts Fest, which is a nice little short film festival. So, yeah, it's got quite a lot of life ahead of it. I'm still waiting to hear back from quite a few of the short film festivals. I've got a couple which I can't really talk about because I'm not allowed to until they've announced their program. It's screening Nottingham, I think, Nottingham International Film Festival on Tuesday, which is the 13th. But the big news is that post-festival screenings, we've been picked up by Gunpowder and Sky in the US, and it'll be going to their Alta platform, which is quite exciting. So, again, it's been picked up by, you know, a horror platform, and it'll be streaming from next year. We haven't got a date yet. They're giving us a bit of a respite whilst it's in the festivals, but I imagine that's going to be sometime around about springtime that'll be streaming from Alta.
That's great.
Yeah.
So you've done shorts, you've produced shorts. I haven't heard the word feature ever out of your mouth. So no feature?
Yeah, I directed a feature-length documentary a couple of years ago called The Final Reel, which was a very small-scale, partly self-funded, partly funded by the Heritage Lottery Fund in the UK, which is puts all sorts of money into different sort of heritage-based projects. And we ended up with a feature-length documentary. And the film's about the sort of, in a nutshell, the sort of history of the cinema-going experience in the UK. But we used the kind of microcosm of Norfolk as a kind of backdrop because we found that the that history was almost identical anywhere in the UK. I mean, the finished film played all over the UK at different cinemas, and we had people giving us some amazing feedback saying, this reminded me of the cinema I grew up going to in Bolton. You know, this reminded me of the cinema I used to go to with my kids when I was growing up in Manchester, this kind of thing. So that was a project which took up the best part of 4 years of my life, from start to finish. We shot it over a period of 2 years, on and off. We had part funding, as I said, which was great. But again, you know, my trusty cinematographer, Chris Sharman, who's amazing, he's just shot the Ghost of Peter Sellers feature documentary, which premiered at Venice and is it's screened at Telluride and is getting some real good heat, so that should be in cinemas hopefully next year. But he's an amazing cinematographer. I think he regretted the day he said, yeah, that sounds like a nice project, I'll help you on that. So we were still shooting that 2 years after we started, not every day, but sort of like, you know, a couple of days here, a couple of days there. So we amassed this sort of wealth of stories from, you know former cinema managers, projectionists, you know, audience members, and we kind of cut it into an hour and a half feature, which we sort of packaged up, and we had the great gift of the voice of the esteemed narrator, Sir John Hurt. He gave his time for free, and we recorded his amazing voice, which kind of gave the whole project a bit of you know, legitimacy and gravitas then enabled us to sort of like book it independently into independent theatres across the UK, which was fantastic. And it had a bit of festival love as well. So, yeah, currently available to buy on DVD from Amazon.co.uk.
There you go. Well, that's all my questions. Are you ready for fun questions?
Yeah, go for it.
Favorite film?
Oh, gosh, that's a really hard one, but it's 2001, Space Odyssey.
I figured as much. That would have been my guess, something along Kimberly line, just by the way you talk. Because you're English, I have to ask this question. Your favorite pub?
My favorite pub? Oh, gosh, that's either the Fat Cat in Norwich or the Beehive in Norwich as well. Yeah, I'm blessed with a city which has some amazing pubs. There used to be a saying that there's a pub for every day of the year and there's a church for every Sunday of the year. I think there's now more pubs than there is churches. But, you know.
If you couldn't live in England, where else would you live?
Oh, that's a really good question. At the moment, Canada's seeming quite nice.
We're a little bit warmer than you. You might be happy.
Yeah. I think, you know, my wife and I once discussed about possibly moving to Australia. She's a bit of an Australia file. We both seem to have a deep love of Australian cinema. But, you know, I guess, you know, it's a long way to go. I think either Canada or Australia or maybe even New Zealand, you know, where there's more sheep than there is people.
Oh, then you want to go to New Zealand. You don't want to be there. Well, thank you for your time. Your film was great.
Oh, thanks so much. Yeah, thanks for all the great feedback and thanks for, you know, taking the time to interview me. I find this sort of experience quite, you know, new, and but it's quite fun. So, yeah.
Good to hear. Hope to expect to see new things from you soon.
Right, yeah. Well, I've got another short thriller which we're shooting in a few weeks, and I've started shooting a short documentary which is about Tony Strong, who was a scenic artist back in the day and has worked with some amazing film directors like Ken Russell Kubrick and was the guy who did the painting of the tarot cards in Live and Let Die. He's now 97. He's retired from the industry, but he still paints and his work is still hired out, which is amazing. That's really cool. Yeah, so he's had work featured in The Crown and The Outlaw King, which I've mentioned, which is amazing. He's a great character. So we're working on a short documentary about that, which should be – we were almost shot on that, so finished – we're almost wrapped on that. So that should be cutting that over Christmas and hopefully have that finished for the new year. And like I say, I'm working on another short thriller. Oh, that'll be the phone. So, yeah, but I'm working on another short thriller and, you know, watch this space for a longer project as well.
Cool. Thank you for your time.
Nice one. Cheers, mate. Thank you very much. Bye-bye.
Hey, I just want to say thank you for listening to this great interview. We have more on our website at www.extrafeatures.ca. And if you enjoyed it, can you please go to iTunes and leave us an iTunes review and like us on our Facebook page. Thank you.